The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
All right. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am Connor Dunning, former Memphis Tiger videographer, filling in for Gabe Kuhn while he's out. You can find me on Twitter, at cdunning929. I'm also over on Blue Sky. Just search Connor Dunning and I should pop up. It's bowl day for the Memphis Tigers. Tonight they will take on 6-6 West Virginia to try and secure their 11th win of the season. We'll preview that game with Christian Fowler and get into the early season success of Memphis Hoops around 425. As always, Jeff Calkins will join us since it is Tuesday at 5 o'clock to talk bowl game, Memphis basketball attendance, and Josh Allen turning into Superman after he got engaged. The stats of Josh Allen since that bye week engagement have been otherworldly. Otherworldly. We'll talk to Jeff Calkins about that at 5 o'clock. Then DeMichael Cole will join around 5:25 to discuss NBA ratings, the new All-Star format, and the Grizzlies a quarter into the season. I also have to ask DeMichael Cole about the Memphis media basketball tournament that may or may not be happening. He is the self-proclaimed best hooper in Memphis media. As always, I am joined by the Honorable King George, the Italian George, George Ruggiero. You can find him on Twitter at KingGeorge94. George, ugly football last night. Ugly, ugly football last night.
Not good ball. It really wasn't. We did see some glimpses of, you know, what could come. I say that in the earlier game. I think the earlier game was a little bit better. We saw some of what could be, but that later game.
Oh, God.
Horrible. And you know what I hate? And this is just a personal gripe about the broadcasters who are doing these games. I don't know about you. To me, at this point, Buck and Aikman, they should get the second game. Give me Fowler and Riddick.
Really?
I love Chris Fowler as a play-by-play guy. He just brings more energy at this point.
I've said it for many years on this station. I'm a big Buck guy.
I like Buck.
I love Aikman. I thought they did a really good job on the broadcast last night, specifically when it came to Caleb Williams and Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
Having Aikman break down their quarterback play, because he's basically right all the time. Every single time he speaks, it seems like that's what happens on the field. So I very much enjoyed it. I do agree with you, though. Bears-Vikings, pretty good football game. Pretty good football game. A lot of things to talk about from that game, specifically the Vikings being 12-2. Are they true contenders to win the Super Bowl? We'll get into that here in just a moment. But that other game, Atlanta Raiders, stabbed my eyeballs out. There's nothing for me there. There's nothing for me there. You're watching Kirk Cousins on a single Achilles trying to get through the football game. He's holding back a talented Atlanta Falcons team. And then you have just a dumpster fire on the other side. Pure dumpster fire. Desmond Ridder running around, throwing the ball, not knowing what's going on. It was awful television. The only time I was truly watching that game was when Vikings-Bears was commercial break. Commercial break. Or the 1,000 flags that got thrown. Every time there was a delay in that game, I'd flip it back over. And it was just ugly. I think the most entertaining moment in the game for me was when that Raiders guy blew up the Falcons kicker. That was hysterical. It's always fun to see a kicker get blown up.
Yeah. I mean, that it really just was not good football. The only good thing at this point that I'm watching the Falcons for, it's two things. One, Bijan Robinson is a star. That guy is fantastic. And speaking on the Falcons kicker, I love Young Wei-Koo. I think he's one of the best kickers in the NFL right now. But if I'm having to watch your football team to wait for the kicker to step on the field, we have problems.
That was also a funny moment from the game last night where the Falcons tried to bait the Raiders into jumping offside. Koo went out there for like a 56-yard field goal, 58, and he didn't even set up correctly. He just kind of stood behind the football and was just like grabbing his crotch, and it's like, hey man, maybe pretend like you're gonna kick the football so they'll take the bait. It was the most obvious we're trying to get you to jump off sides moment I've seen in the NFL this season.
My whole thing with that is I don't know why he doesn't just set up and kick it. That's well within his range.
Might as well.
Like, this is a guy who's pretty darn accurate from 60 plus, let alone 56. Just let him kick it.
But that game was just so dumb. The Raiders are so dumb. There's very little you can take away from it. The Falcons are still trying to claw their way back into the playoff picture. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to do it. Like I said, I think they're a talented football team. But Kirk Cousins is a problem. And the biggest takeaway I had from that game is, even though they got the win, you can feel that Penix clock ticking. You can feel it ticking. It was a big storyline on the broadcast last night. They kept cutting to him. And you have to wonder, how much longer are we going to see Kirk Cousins? I know that he got a win, so that's why he's going to continue to be their starting quarterback. But, man, it is rough when you're watching him try to play. He has zero zip on the football. Zero.
It's all in the lower body. I mean, he's not able to plant properly to get the ball downfield. And you know what? Now that you say that, I'm going to retract my earlier statement. With as much as they were talking about Michael Penix on the broadcast, it was perfect that the college guys were talking about him.
Sure.
They're like, we've seen this guy ball out. Why aren't we seeing it today?
But that's why I do want to focus on the Vikings from last night. They are currently 12-2 and have one of the best defenses in the NFL. They have a high-powered offense. O'Connell, in my opinion, might be the third best offensive coach in the league. I know that you said Andy Reid may be in front of him, and I have no quarrels there. But when it comes to, you know, coaches in the NFL, I think it's McVay, Shanahan, O'Connell, Reid when it comes to offense. Just a brilliant, brilliant scheme. Ben Solak over on ESPN has a great piece up right now about O'Connell's relationship to Sam Darnold and how it is kind of mirroring McVay and Goff back in the early Rams day. So I highly recommend going and checking that out. My question to you, George, is how far do you think this Vikings team can actually go? Because when you look at the Super Bowl odds right now, they are sixth. They are sixth right now. They're only behind Buffalo, Philly, Detroit, Kansas City, and Baltimore. And as the season goes on, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, Detroit's getting more injured and more injured and more injured. So as much as I want to believe in them, it does feel like the door is open all of a sudden for some of these other teams to get in there, because I think a lot of us just expected the Lions were going to be the best team this season. They were going to be my Super Bowl favorite. But now it feels like that it could be anybody's game. I know the Chiefs, you got to see them lose before you're going to believe that they lose. But, you know, they feel vulnerable this season. Do you think the Vikings have a shot, George?
I do. Obviously, my main takeaway with this team right now is this team will go as far as Darnold can take them.
Mm-hmm.
And to his credit this season, Darnold has been extremely productive, and I think a lot of that is a credit to both, actually, Shanahan and O'Connell. If we look at it, former backup last season with the 49ers, regained some of his confidence in the same type of scheme, comes over to a Shanahan-style, you know, West Coast scheme mm-hmm. that O'Connell is running, and now he's given the confidence to, hey, J.J. McCarthy's not breathing down your neck. I'm sorry, Daniel Jones is not breathing down your neck. I don't care, you know, that he's on the practice squad.
They kind of have a crazy quarterback room, though.
Yeah, it's Sam Darnold, former number 3 overall pick, Daniel Jones, former, you know, first-round pick, and now J.J. McCarthy, who's on the shelf for the year, their own first-round draft selection. So it's kind of insane. But Darnold is running this offense to a T. And as they start to get healthier as well, I know Aaron Jones has missed a little bit of time this season with injury. They got TJ Hawkinson back midway through the season. If they can get him integrated. In the last couple weeks, we've seen what we really expected from a, you know, two-headed snake in this passing game between Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson. Addison has had some monster games these last handful of weeks. If they can get both of those guys going at the same time, that is a dangerous, dangerous offense.
Yeah, and last night, they were really trying to get Justin Jefferson going. They were struggling getting him the football a few times. I will say, though, Justin Jefferson just dropped a touchdown pass. Just straight up dropped a touchdown pass, which immediately led to a Sam Darnold interception. You know, Darnold was like, really, dude? Really? That's going to hurt my stats. I'll also say, on that play, Justin Jefferson almost got really hurt. His cleat got stuck in the grass for just a split second, and it got lifted right before that guy hit his leg. There was a moment on that replay where I was like, oh, he missed a torn ACL by a millisecond, and that would have changed the Vikings season completely if he got hurt. But I agree with you. It's all going to come down to Sam Darnold because we know that their defense is going to show up. I think one of my favorite trends this season is Brian Flores and what he is doing with that Vikings defense. It is straight up, remember the Titans. You blitz all night! You blitz all night! If they cross that line of scrimmage, I'm going to take out every last one of you. I love it so much. He's blitzing like 63% of the time. And that's why I don't understand. Gabe talks about this a lot because Memphis football does it too.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just blitz every time? Just blitz. Blitz the guys. Because as we've seen in the NFL this season, the quarterbacks don't know how to handle it outside of like 7 or 8 guys. Blitz them. Put pressure on them. It is working for the Vikings. Their defense is elite. It's all going to come down to, can Sam Darnold get it done in the playoffs, which we've just never really seen him do.
He's never actually had that opportunity to do that.
That is fair.
To your point as well with what gets these quarterbacks rattled, Brian Flores does a great job of this because we saw it earlier in the season when, you know, people were talking about this other scheme that was going around, a lot of the too high safety looks that, man, these quarterbacks are really struggling. Brian Flores works both ends of that to absolute perfection. He's running these crazy hybrid blitzes where he's even dropping defensive linemen into coverage in the middle of the field when he needs to and gets these safeties and edge rushers just going at full bore at these quarterbacks. I mean, we saw it last night, and I don't want to be disrespectful to Caleb Williams. He's in a very tough situation right now, especially with his offensive coordinator situation, his coaching situation, and honestly, he's a rookie. It's not just the fact that he's got a ton of turmoil going on around him, you know, above him in this front office and coaching staff. It's he is a true rookie, but you can see the talent on the field. Those Vikings were all over him.
All over.
All
now,
night.
He was also running into sacks a lot because he panics very quickly. And that's why another takeaway from the game was Caleb Williams is a talented quarterback. He's got a little while to go. He's got talented weapons around him. I'm not necessarily blaming the offensive line, but he panics really fast. There was also a few times where Troy Aikman would just pause the screen and say, open, 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 and Williams was just not looking at them.
Yeah.
He's got to read the field better. He's got to stay more patient. A big trend that I've seen in the NFL this season is these younger quarterbacks don't know how to operate in the paint or in the pocket. in the pocket.
Yeah.
You've heard Peyton Manning talk about it. You've heard Tom Brady talk about it. You have got to be patient in the pocket. Take your time. It's one thing that Sam Darnold actually does very well. He does very well. He has one of, like, from snap to pass, I think he has the third slowest rate in the NFL this season. He takes his time. He's making decisions. He's working through his reads. Caleb Williams, he's looking at one guy, and if it's not there, he tries to take off running. And just over and over and over again, he's putting himself in tough situations. And I think one of the reasons we've seen him have this inaccuracy this year is he's mostly throwing on the run. A lot of his throws are on the run, and there were two or three last night where he just missed something that could have turned into a touchdown. So he's got some adjustment, but you can see the talent there. He just needs better coaching, which he was not getting from Eberflus. And we saw Hard Knocks. There were so many red flags during Hard Knocks, and I talked to Jason Smith about this after his show while we were kind of, you know, in the hallway. I was like, when you saw on Hard Knocks, Eberflus have those meetings with Caleb Williams, and he was like, you don't have to take notes. I was like, uh-oh, this is bad. This is not going to go well. He was not holding his rookie quarterback accountable. He was almost giving him the franchise and assuming that his talent was going to lead them to victories, and it just felt like he wasn't prepared in the correct way heading into the season.
Now, to your point as well, I'm not going to put everything on this Bears offensive line.
No.
But we're talking about roster construction with this team as well.
Sure.
Yes, he's got all these weapons around him between DeAndre Swift, Roma Dunze, who they drafted, Keenan Allen, DJ Moore.
Allen had an amazing catch last night. Incredible.
Phenomenal.
Incredible.
At the same time, they did not put as much stock into this offensive line that they needed to. One of the sacks that happened that was not on Williams was Greenlaw just blowing him up. I'm talking demolishing.
When he jumped up in the air. Yeah, Caleb, yes. Don't jump, dude. Don't jump. You're going to get blown up.
It wasn't just that. It's the fact that as soon as he leaves his feet there, we're talking snap. There are three guys on him, and he's like, I have to just get this ball out. Oh, the ball's behind me now, and I'm flat on my back on the turf.
It was one of those hits where when it happened in real time, you were like, oh! Yeah. But then they showed the replay, and his head snapped back three different times, including one time when it hit the ground. I was shocked he was able to go back into the game because he was probably seeing butterflies.
Caleb Williams is a tough kid. He's been hit a lot this year. Some from his own feet and his own lack of patience, some on that offensive line. I'm not going to put everything on Caleb because this roster is not exactly well built for a rookie quarterback.
It does feel like, though, when you look at the NFC, it's open again. The Detroit Lions were the dominant team all year. And then, surprise, Vikings are 12-2, and they're playing some really good football heading into the end of the season. I'm excited to see what happens. You might need to start believing in the Minnesota Vikings. When we come back, we're going to talk to Christian Fowler about the Memphis bowl game, Memphis basketball, and a little bit more. Stick around. Listen to Connor Dunning on 910 FM, ESPN.
All right, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. And if you're betting college football bowl games, and that can be a dicey endeavor, we're the podcast for you. We're releasing breakdowns for every matchup with new episodes dropping almost every day. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in. Every Tuesday, we are joined by someone I'd like to call a Tigers and Cowboys expert. You can find him on Twitter at CFowlerBCM. He's the senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. Christian Fowler, happy bowl day to you.
It is bowl day. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm looking forward to the game tonight. We finally got some Memphis football back to watch. But before we get into that game, I want to start with Memphis basketball because they picked up a huge win against Clemson on the road, took down number 16. And I think that what they've been able to do in their big wins this year is they've been able to establish the tone in the first half of these games. And you heard that Penny Hardaway in his comments recently say, you know, the biggest thing that we have to do is that we can't spot these teams' points in the first half. And it really seemed like that's what they were able to do against Clemson.
Yeah, it was another impressive victory. It was Memphis 4-1, 5-1 in the quad one now, right up there with Auburn among the best in the country.
Yeah.
In quad one, 5-1, yeah. So right there with Auburn with the most quad one wins in the country. So it's extremely impressive what they've been able to do. And I know we talked extensively last week about Arkansas State. What did that mean about the prospects going forward, especially into this four-game stretch that they're now one game into? And they responded really as good as they could have. I mean, obviously it wasn't a perfect game. They didn't go blow the doors off of Clemson, but this is one of the better teams in the country in a road environment. And Memphis, once again, kind of like that UConn game, it felt a little bit similar to that in a sense as far as they weathered the storm late into that game. Because Gabe and I talked about this on the podcast last night, but usually, especially when it's a home team, you go into overtime, the home team's typically going to run away with it. And Memphis didn't allow them to do that, so that's kind of where the parallel to the UConn game is. They go into overtime, and I'm sure a lot of Memphis fans just having that battered fan syndrome were like, okay, here we go. We got it to overtime, and now they're going to run away with it. But Tyrese Hunter really took over the end of that game, took over the overtime portion of that game, and pulled Memphis through to a win that, once again, we said this last week, they didn't have to have it, but 500 is the bare minimum, we feel like, in this four-game stretch. And to start it off with a win over Clemson, who was ranked number 16 going into this game, which was the highest ranked out of any of those four opponents of Clemson, Virginia, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss. Now that's Ole Miss. But at the time, it was Clemson. They get the win on the road there. So it's a massive victory that Memphis was kind of able to stay within the flow of the game, not let it get away from them, not get rattled into overtime. And it just was, to me, another example of the leadership overall of this team and kind of the wherewithal of them to stick through it and understand that we're good enough to pull this out. Doesn't matter if it's in regulation, overtime, who the opponent is, where the location is. If we just stick through it, we're good enough to win these games. And they did so once again against Clemson.
Yeah, I think one of my big takeaways from the game was I just feel like the Memphis Tigers team from last season would have lost that game. Coming off of a loss to Arkansas State, they would have been down. They wouldn't have played together. And in the Clemson game, when it got tight at the end of that second half, when they had to fight back, when they had to force overtime, and then win that game in overtime on the road, I just can't imagine the team last year playing together like that. And that is why you and I have had the conversation a few times about being really cautious about holding the sins of last year's team against this one, because Nicholas Jourdain is the only guy that is carried over from that team. It's basically a new coaching staff. You heard Coach K actually talk about it recently when he was being interviewed by Memphis media. He said that Penny Hardaway has built a great staff, and you have somebody like Nolan Smith there. And that is why I think my biggest takeaway from the early season of the Memphis Tigers has been, oh, this team knows how to win basketball games. They play together, and when it gets tough, that's almost when they're playing their best basketball.
Yeah, which you really can't ask for any more than that. And I agree with your sentiment in the fact that I think last year's team would have dropped this game. I think they would have let kind of that feeling of the Arkansas State loss linger a little bit, and maybe they would have played it close, but they probably just wouldn't have been able to pull it out, especially in the manner that Memphis did this weekend. So overall, it's extremely impressive, and that was the big question, was like, how did they respond? Yes, they had a terrible, inexcusable loss, but you can't go back and change the past, so how do you respond from it? And they did so about as good as you could expect a team to do. So I think we can move on from that loss now and look forward to the next three games, and we don't have to harp on that anymore. And I think that cleared people's palate a little bit of, like you just talked about, the sins of last year's team or the sins of teams in yesteryears. So it's never a perfect season. Things are always going to go awry, but it's about how you respond. And I think they passed that test with flying colors, and now they have massive opportunities lying ahead to continue stacking up big quad one wins heading into non-conference.
Yeah, right now Memphis is 5-1 in quad one games, the only loss coming to Auburn. And it's only December 17th, and you already have five quad one wins. Now, you do have a quad three loss, and Penny Hardaway talked about how, you know, that hurts you. But you do have a big opportunity in these next few games to pick up a couple bigger quad one wins. You know, you got Mississippi State coming up. You got Ole Miss coming up. I'm not sure Virginia is a quad one win, considering where their program is right now. They're going through a lot of change. I would have to look that up. But we talked about, try to go 2-2 in this stretch, and it's going to benefit you in the long term. And picking up this win against Clemson in the first one, which is arguably the hardest game of this stretch, is such a massive deal for the Memphis Tigers, because what that Arkansas State loss did is it just shrank that margin of error. And it's not necessarily about the non-con schedule for the Tigers right now, because they already have those five quad one wins. It's more so protecting yourself from losses in the American, because I think that it would be a bit unfair to expect the Memphis Tigers just to roll through the American undefeated. I kind of expect them to lose one or two games. But when you pick up wins against Clemson, when you have wins against UConn, who, by the way, has gotten it back together, has picked up a couple huge wins in the last few weeks, and I know that Memphis Tiger fans have some feelings about Dan Hurley after that game and UConn overall, but Tiger fans, we got to be fans of UConn for the rest of the season, because the better they do, the better that win looks. So it's going to be really important for the Tigers here in these next few to try to go 3-1. That would be massive for you heading into the conference schedule. I do want to ask you, though, what do you expect to see from a team like Virginia, considering all the change they're going through?
Yeah, I'm honestly, like, with the way that Memphis has played in their bigger games, the UConn, Michigan State, Clemson, like, the way that they've played in those games, I don't think they should have a problem with Virginia. Mm-hmm. I think they should relatively easily be able to win that game, and I think they're the better team. Now, I think you might have some people saying, well, with Virginia being down, does Memphis overlook them for kind of the not in-state but in-state matchups coming up against Mississippi State and Ole Miss? I just don't see that. It's a very high brand recognition team that's typically on the national scale. So I don't see them underestimating Virginia or going in there looking forward to Mississippi State and Ole Miss. So I think Memphis is the better team in this game. I think they come in very prepared. And honestly, and I could be wrong, I think Memphis probably runs away with that game in the second half. First half is kind of a big question mark, as we've seen this year. Like, I don't expect Memphis to run away with it in the first half, because they just really haven't shown that they can do that against top-level competition or, you know, decent competition. But I think eventually Memphis's talent will win out, and that they'll pull away in the second half of that game. So that one, I'm really not too worried about that at all. And I think if if they're able to get that game, I don't see them dropping both of those next two games. So, I mean, with the win against Clemson in the first game, I feel really confident about Virginia and then at least one of the two of Ole Miss and Mississippi State. I think they really set themselves up for success with that win and also gave themselves momentum going into these next three games. So it really, once again, like it could not have went any better this weekend for Memphis.
Yeah, and again, Penny Hardaway has talked about a few different times recently how that first half is going to be so important for the Memphis Tigers. They have to come out, establish tone, and punch teams in the mouth. And that's exactly what they did against Clemson. They had them on their back heels for a little bit. It's what they did against UConn. And at the end of the second half, the shooting allowed Clemson to get back into the game, and same thing with UConn. But they took care of business when they had to. And now when you look at the polls, they're up to 21 in the AP poll, 22 in the coaches poll. They're 30 in the net. And I'm not sure if you saw this, but in Lenardi's, you know, bracketology, they are the next team up to be a 4 seed in the NCAA tournament. So it does seem like that after that big Clemson win, everybody, not just locally, but nationally, are beginning to believe that this Memphis Tigers team might be able to make some noise.
Yeah, and the thing is it really is lining up for them beautifully because they'll be favored in the Virginia game, and I haven't looked at BPI yet for the next two games, but I would imagine they're close percentage-wise. So just say that Memphis wins two of the next three and then loses maybe two or three in conference. I think they kind of stand pat to where they are right now, a 4, 5, 6 seed somewhere in that range. And so it's really all right in front of them right now. And one thing that that me and Gabe talked about a lot on the podcast last night, and I think is really good, and he made this point of what kind of loss does this team take, you know, and comparing it to last year. Because last year their bad losses felt like, we just roll the ball out there against a bad team, we win. Like, plain, cut, dry, simple. If we're going to play an inferior team, all we got to do is show up and we win. So is that how this team goes about it? Is that how this team goes about non-conference? Or with them having the loss to Arkansas State, do they understand now, okay, we got to play well to win these games? Like, it's not just we can't roll the ball out there and win. And to me, I feel like this team understands that they have everything in front of them, and it's not going to be extremely easy. Target on your back. You're the best team in the conference right now. So I think we said this last week too. Memphis is going to lose a couple of conference games more than likely. Mm-hmm. It's just extremely difficult to go run the table and go undefeated in conference. But I just feel like conference losses this year won't be because of a lack of effort or right. attention to that upcoming game. I think really if they do drop a couple conference games, it'll be they just had an off night. You know, maybe P.J. Haggerty wasn't on, or maybe P.J. Haggerty and Tyrese Hunter were both off on that particular night. Like, I just don't see this team being uninterested during the conference slate like the team last year seemed a lot. And I think that is very good for this team moving forward, because you can excuse a couple of conference losses. It happens. We see it in every conference. Some of the top teams lose to some of the bottom teams or some of the mid-tier teams. It's just part of basketball. It's part of playing the schedule that they do and just, you know, constantly rotating these teams. So I think they're in a great spot right now. And just with what we've seen from the veterans on this team, as far as a leadership aspect on the floor play, I just think that this is a very good team that could end up just like Lenardi has them right now, like a 4, 5, 6 seed. If all they got to do is execute, because they're good enough to be that high of a seed, they just have to go out there and win the games.
Yeah, and I can confirm that Virginia is going to be a quad two game. They're going to be a quad two game for the Memphis Tigers. And you touched on it right there, and I agree with you. I think one of the major differences between this team this season and last year is the veteran leadership that they have. And you spoke about Tyrese Hunter and P.J. Haggerty, and I think that it has been really important for the Memphis Tigers this season to have both of those guys out there, because they have both shown the ability to fill it up when they need to. They're putting in high effort on the defensive end. I would say Tyrese Hunter is kind of the head of the snake on that end of the floor, and they've really been doing a good job of turning, you know, defense into offense. But what I really noticed in that Clemson game is that Tyrese Hunter, when P.J. Haggerty doesn't necessarily have it at scoring, because Haggerty still filled up the stat sheet with rebounds and assists, and Penny Hardaway gave him a lot of credit in that, on his coach's show that he did this week, but Tyrese Hunter has shown this ability to take the scoring load for the Memphis Tigers and run with it. I'm not sure if you're aware of what he is shooting from three this season. He is currently third in the nation among players with at least 60 attempts with 51.6% from three. He is technically ninth in the country, but again, the qualifier of 60 attempts that was from Jason Munns. I know that this may not be sustainable for Tyrese Hunter, but I do think that the Memphis Tigers have shown that three-point shooting might actually be a strength for them this year, because you also have Kobe Rogers, who is 44th among all D1 players in three-point percentage this year at 44.6%. And then I looked it up, and P.J. Haggerty, I know he was a streaky shooter last year, but showed signs of maybe having that ability. Right now, he's shooting 39%. Nicholas Jourdain is shooting 35% from three. So, shockingly, the Tigers actually have a little bit of shooting this season.
Yeah, they have it's concentrated as far as the players go. It's not like this whole team can shoot, but when you have
right,
someone
yeah.
hit
Moose
like
is
Kyrie,
not stepping out there, right?
Right. Right. But if you have a single player shooting 51%, then you feel pretty good about your odds. And speaking on Tyrese and kind of just the scoring rotation of those three being PJ, Tyrese and Kobe, the thing is, in the majority of games, two of the three have shown that they can step up if the other one's not on. And right. that is absolutely crucial for this team, because like you mentioned, you go on the road and you play the number 16 team in the country, and the player that's expected to be your offensive leader and your scoring leader has an off night. You have to have someone to supplement that scoring. And fortunately for Memphis, they had Tyrese Hunter and Kobe Rogers. I mean, Tyrese Hunter shot 7 of 11 from 3 in that game, hit a big one in overtime.
Huge.
And they've just shown that – it doesn't matter where it comes from. You know, just like you said, and I think it's so important as far as a leader, from a leadership perspective, P.J. Haggerty did not have his best offensive game against Clemson, but he was still engaged. He was still rebounding the ball. He was still getting the ball to Tyrese and Kobe and moving the ball in the backcourt. And that's what you have to have. I mean, stars are not going to hit 100% of the time. Every night is not going to be a 25-plus per game night. But you still have to be involved. You still have to be a threat. You still have to make those around you better. And that's something that this Memphis team has that is just rare overall in college basketball, especially in this day and age, is that if a star player is off, he can still be selfless. That's what P.J. Haggerty's shown. Tyrese Hunter has shown that. Kobe Rogers has shown that. And if those three players continue to play off of each other the way that they have this season, it is an extremely dangerous backcourt that all three of those guys can go for 20-plus on any given night. You know, two of those three guys can go for 20-plus on any given night and hit 40%-plus from three. I mean, it is an extreme luxury that this team has. And the fact that they are number two in the country in three-point shooting percentage is something that none of us saw coming. But it has made them an even more dangerous team than we expected them to be. Because it's a threat that we didn't see coming. So it really is cool to watch, because it was unexpected. Usually you have an idea of this is what this team's strength is going to be. Nobody was predicting three-point percentage, and like you said, they've got Tyrese and Kobe, who are both extremely high. Kobe around the 44 mark and 51 for Tyrese.
It's just crazy.
It is insane. And then as a team, second in the country.
Yeah, and you know, again, Tyrese Hunter's not going to shoot 50% from three the entire season. I said yesterday when I was talking to David Kopp from CBS Sports, if he is able to do that, just go ahead and give him a key to the city, because he is going to be a hero, for an all-time Memphian hero, if he is able to shoot 50% from three. But I think if he can just stay around 40% for the entire season, that's going to be a huge win for the Memphis Tigers. And I agree with you. They should be able to win most of their basketball games as long as two of these three guys show up. When one of them shows up, that's when you're going to see them struggle. And that's kind of what happened against Louisiana Tech. It's kind of what happened against Arkansas State. So the hope is moving forward, just, you know, two of these three guys show up. I do want to ask you, though, this is a fun Memphis Tigers team. They are winning at a high level right now. They are playing hard defense. They are playing together. And Penny Hardaway is pleading to fans to fill up that arena, because he is saying that it looks empty and they feed off of the energy in the FedEx Forum. Why do you think the Tigers are struggling with attendance this season? Is it more so that it's because of the schedule and they just haven't played big games at home? Or do you think that there's just this weird, you know, this cautious optimism that Tiger fans have, and they almost want them to prove it a little bit more before they, you know, spend money to go see them?
No, I think it's just the names that appear in the arena.
I agree.
That's typically what it is. I mean,
if you kind of have to look at it practically, like, okay, if Memphis is playing Arkansas State at home on a whatever, you know, weekday night or even a weekend night, whatever, it's just not alluring. Now, if Memphis was playing number 16 Clemson at home on a Saturday afternoon, it's going to be packed out. And that's been the case throughout Penny's entire tenure. I mean, you even go back to, I can't remember if it was his first year or second year. I believe it was his first year. Obviously, the expectations weren't super high, but Ole Miss game was either sold out or close to sold out. So it really just depends on opponent. I mean, a lot of people aren't going to show up for North Texas or Tulsa, who's like 318 in the net right now. It's just not going to happen. It's hard for someone to sit there and look at tickets and say, is it really worth buying a ticket to go see Memphis beat Tulsa by 30 versus I can go watch, you know, two top 25 teams in the country with players that'll be playing in the league probably one day and see a really close competitive game. So I get it from Penny's perspective because, like, it's supposed to be like you show up for your team. But that's just – I don't know. That's just not really how live sports works. You want to see a good game. You want to see good players and good teams. And so I think that's it. I don't think it has anything to do with let's sit back and wait to see what this team is. I think it all comes down to opponent and who Memphis is playing on any given night.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Totally agree with you. I don't have a problem with Penny saying that whatsoever. You want to get support for your team, especially one playing at this high of a level. But I tend to agree with you. It is more so opponent, and that, you know, ties into the larger conversation of Memphis needs to get into a better conference so that they can have better opponents in the FedEx Forum, which will certainly help with attendance. And what will help that is what we're going to move to next, Memphis football. Memphis football success is going to help you get into another conference. And tonight we have a Memphis Tigers bowl game, number 25 Memphis versus Virginia, who is 6-6 on the season. Last time I checked, Memphis was a 4.5-point favorite. What do you expect to see from Memphis tonight, and how important is this game to help Memphis gain that momentum back for this offseason?
I'll start with the momentum question because it's difficult, right? I mean, winning a bowl game, getting the 11th win of the year, those are big things. But as far as, like, building momentum, I feel like we usually talk about that when a lot of the team is returning, and it's like it's a little bit of a sneak preview for what you'll see the following year.
Sure.
But I think there's going to be so much turnover on this team, it's hard to really say how much momentum they'll build from it. Obviously, it's great for recruiting to say that you won a bowl game, that you won 11 games, that you were, you know, nationally televised in a bowl game and all these things. So from that perspective, from a recruiting perspective, from a, you know, just a national perspective, I think momentum is big because Memphis is already in the top 25. I think they are number 25 right now. So you win a bowl game and kind of see what happens with the rest of the bowls. You could jump up a little bit in the end of season rankings and end around the 20 mark potentially, which would be big with 11 wins. But as far as, like, on the field, does this help the team moving into the off season? I don't know how much it really does. I think for morale, it's good. Like, yeah, you're going into the spring off of a win, which is great. But I just don't know how many of your star players will be back for next year for it to mean that much as far as on the field momentum. I mean, you're losing a lot. You're losing a lot of key contributors after this bowl game. So that momentum question is a little bit tricky because I think it helps in some aspects, but I think in other aspects as far as just on the field and for the 2025 season, I don't think it does that much for, like, the team and everybody inside of the building. As far as what I expect in the game, I expect to see Memphis be a lot more motivated than West Virginia. I mean, West Virginia wasn't a very good team this year. They don't really have anything to play for, 6-6. Offensively, they were kind of a mess with Garrett Green at quarterback this year. But for Memphis, for all the reasons I said, 11 wins, bowl game, moving up in the top 25, a lot of guys that are playing their last college football game, I think we'll see a lot more motivation from the Memphis team. And my expectation, I really expect Memphis to win this game. I think they're the better team. I think they have more to play for. And I think there's a reason that they're favored in this game.
Yeah, totally agree. I think we've gotten some good news from Jonah Dillon, who was down there reporting on the game. It sounds like Memphis is pretty much going to have all of their best players in this one, and West Virginia is kind of in a state of chaos right now with a lot of program change. It's not dissimilar from the Virginia team that Memphis basketball is about to face. But you touched on a guy and on the players who may be playing their last game for the Memphis Tigers. And I think Seth Hennigan is the biggest one doing that. How do you think we are going to view Seth Hennigan's career once it's done with the Memphis Tigers?
I think he'll always be looked back on as kind of in kind of the same conversation as Brady and Riley and Paxton and those guys, just because of the numbers that he put up. But it's just from a legacy standpoint, he never had that defining moment where it was like, this is when he became a local legend or a Memphis legend. Not that he didn't have really great performances in some games, but they never made it to a conference championship. And I think that's the biggest game, or the biggest thing that could, you know, help his legacy. You look back on a guy like Brady White, who, yes, he put up great numbers, but wasn't the best quarterback in the country by any means, but led him to a conference championship and, you know, had the college game day game against SMU in his time at Memphis. And there are moments where you can look at and go, wow, that defines his legacy. Even if he, you know, never went on to play in the NFL, never went on to have a pro career really in the NFL, there were still legacy defining moments. And Seth just never really had that. And I think some of the other quarterbacks had more opportunities because they had bigger games against, you know, the likes of Cincinnati and SMU and Houston and teams like that, that Seth didn't fully get the opportunity to have. But also he never made it to a conference championship game. Yeah, he won bowl games. He won a lot of regular season games, but he never, it kind of feels incomplete. There was just never that one defining moment where you go, that's when he became a legend. So I think people will look back on him fondly, but I think he does kind of fall behind Riley and Paxton and Brady in the pecking order because he just didn't have that shining moment.
Another guy that's going to play his last game for the Memphis Tigers is Mario Anderson. And when you look at his season, he's had a tremendous year. 1,292 yards, 17 touchdowns, and 5.6 yards per average each carry. Have we given him enough credit for how good of a season he's had?
Absolutely not. I mean, you have not heard anything. Mario Anderson's had the quietest 17-touchdown season that I can remember. I mean, no one's really talked about him. And I think you said it a couple weeks ago, like, if you go look at his stats, you'd be like, wow, he really did this all year? Like, why were we not noticing this? And I think it's because it just came in an offense that wasn't very explosive. Right. Like, you look at Darrell Henderson and Patrick Taylor, Kenny Gainwell, Tony Pollard, these guys, they all played in high-octane, explosive offenses. And, you know, some of them put up those numbers, but some of them didn't put up numbers as good as Mario Anderson. But they were playing on exciting teams that scored a lot of points, and they were a focal point of that offense. And, yes, Mario Anderson was the focal point, but he was the focal point of kind of a plodding, boring, more pro-style offense for the majority of the season that was kind of okay, just running the ball, controlling the clock, and getting out of there with a win, and not an offense that you tune in to see. Like the offenses that the guys I just mentioned played in, you turned on Memphis football to watch that offense and to watch what those guys would do on any given week. And it just wasn't the same. So I think Mario had an outstanding year. He put up great stats, but it wasn't in the same manner. Like, it didn't feel the same because he wasn't making a ton of these big explosive long runs like Darrell Henderson, because A, that's not really his style. And B, that's not really the style of the offense. The offense was kind of built to, you know, 5-6 yards of play and shorten the game and win the time of possession battle. Whereas 3, 4, 5 years ago, when those other running backs were playing, it was a sprint to the end zone. It was a race to the end zone, score as many points as you can. So it's a little bit weird that we haven't heard as much about him, but at the same time, it's kind of understandable why we haven't.
Moving on to the Heisman, we have a new Heisman winner in Travis Hunter. And my simple question to you is, did they get it right? It's the closest Heisman race that we've had since 2009.
I don't think there was a wrong answer. That's really where I stand on this one. I think the way that I put it is, if Travis Hunter had this season last year, he runs away with it. If Ashton Jeanty has this season last year, he runs away with it. Like, they were both extremely worthy Heisman candidates that just got unlucky that they both had great seasons in the same year. That's really how I look at it. So I figured it would be really close. I'm not surprised that it was really close. But there was, to me, there wasn't a wrong answer. I think you can make very good arguments either way. I mean, for Travis Hunter, he did something this season that literally no one else has ever done. And I think you have casual fans that say, well, Charles Woodson won the Heisman and played both sides of the ball. No, Charles Woodson was a full-time defensive player that had some plays and some packages on offense, but right. didn't play very much offense at all. Travis Hunter was a full-time corner and a full-time wide receiver who won the Biletnikoff Award. And what was it? Did he win the – was it the Thorpe Award? He won another award also. I can't quite remember. But he won an offensive award, a defensive award, and the Heisman. Like, that just doesn't happen. There's never been a player to play both sides of the ball and excel and be top five, top ten in their respective position groups on both sides of the ball. The argument for Ashton Jeanty isn't as stats-based. Yes, he had just ridiculous, outstanding numbers. But, I mean, we've seen numbers close to that. Barry Sanders, Melvin Gordon, we've seen seasons close to it. The thing is that Boise State is playing in the college football playoff.
Right.
They have a bye. They almost beat the number one team in the country in Oregon, who was undefeated throughout the year. And without Ashton Jeanty, they're maybe a 6-8 win team somewhere in there. They would have no national recognition. No one would know what they're doing. But because of Ashton Jeanty, they're a college football playoff team with a bye that – was really one of the biggest stories in college football all year simply because they had the best running back in college football. Now, of course, you can go to the stats and say that he by himself outrushed 115 FBS teams, scored 29 touchdowns, averaged like 7.3 yards per carry. He really did. He had an incredible season. So I kind of went into the Heisman announcement saying, whatever way they go with this, I don't think they can get it wrong. So I couldn't complain either way. I think there were two viable candidates that pretty much any other year would have ran away with the voting.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement with you. I was an Ashton Jeanty supporter, but I have no argument against a guy like Travis Hunter, and that is why yesterday on the show I discussed how bothersome it has been the last 48 hours or so to see so many people come out and try to tear down that young man. But when you look at him, I think that he did it the right way. He came from an HBCU. He followed the coach that he was in love with. He turned down teams like Florida State to go to try to help build a program at Colorado. He's a 4.0 student. He seems to do everything right, and I just don't understand why so many people have hate for him. He seems, you know, he should be one of the top picks in the NFL draft. He's one of the most talented players we've seen in college football in a very long time. I just don't understand why people can't just enjoy it.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of ignorance. I think it's a lot of people don't like Deion,
mm-hmm.
and so they kind of throw Travis Hunter into that conversation as well and try to say that whatever they dislike about Deion, Travis Hunter has those same qualities. But, I mean, to me, just from the outside looking in, like, he seems humble. He's obviously extremely intelligent. I mean, to be able to know every offensive play and every defensive play and to play every down that he's played, like, you have to be extremely football intelligent. And so I think he really is kind of a savant in that way, because what other player is learning the full offensive playbook and the full defensive playbook, playing every snap and being elite on both sides of the ball? Like, you can't be over cocky and arrogant and do that like a lot of people have kind of put on him, which is totally not understandable at all. So I think it's really just association. I think people don't like Deion, and so with not liking Deion, they also don't like Travis Hunter, because there's really nothing about him where you can pick apart and say, this is why I don't like him, or this is why he shouldn't have won the Heisman or anything like that. So I think it really is a lot of just ignorance and people not liking one person and associating Travis Hunter with that. So I think that whole thing is dumb. I don't understand it at all. I don't understand why people can't look past their biases and look past kind of preconceived notions or what they hear on Twitter or on X or social media or listen to on ESPN and just look at something for what it is. So that's my only explanation, but I think that is a very ignorant reasoning, if that is people's explanation.
Yeah, my hot take is when you're the Heisman Trophy winner and the AP College Football Player of the Year, you're allowed to have a little bit of cockiness about you. You know, I think that that's a little bit fair. But Christian Fowler, you've been fantastic. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you, guys. See y'all next week.
That was Christian Fowler from Bluff City Media. He is the senior writer and content creator. You can find him on Twitter at CFowlerBCM. When we come back, we will be joined by the great Jeff Calkins. Stick around. You're listening to Connor Dunning on 910 FM ESPN.